Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. I hope you guys are having a great week as always. This is episode 82, and it's a really good one, as they all are, of course. Mark Raimondi from MMA Fighting joins me to talk about all kinds of MMA stuff and some pro wrestling stuff as well. We just had UFC 217 that wrapped up this past Saturday night, and we talk about kind of the implications, what's next for the champions, and all of that. We then, of course, talk about pro wrestling. We talk a little about New Japan, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and the like, and also a preview, a little bit of a preview, of this Saturday's UFC Norfolk, which is going to be a really fun show. I am super excited for the show, and we talk a little bit about that. So my excitement is up. This has been a great week for the sport. So you guys are fans. This is we've earned this after a really, really kind of down year. We have earned this week. And I will tell you a little kind of an asterisk to this whole conversation. Mark and I recorded this on Tuesday night, and as I'm recording this intro, it is Thursday morning. So we did not know, obviously, about the Frankie Edgar injury and also about the Dominic Cruz injury. What a crushing blow in a span of, like, 2 hours on Wednesday night. Ugh, I was at a concert. Happened to be just a break in the action. Kind of looked at my phone and saw the news, and I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. So as great as the week is, there's always seems to be some dark cloud. So when he talks kind of about the Holloway-Edgar fight and some other stuff as well, and obviously we talk about, you know, Dominic Cruz and Jimmy Rivera and the winner of that, getting potentially getting a bantamweight title shot, just kind of keep that in mind that this was recorded on Tuesday night before the events of Wednesday night. So without further ado, let's get to it. An hour-long conversation with yours truly, Mark Raimondi. Let's go. Well, it's been a very long time since we talked to our guest this week for no other reason other than just, actually, there's no reason at all, just because. So he joins us back after a couple of years off. He is of course, you know him, the deputy managing editor at the great site known as MMAfighting.com. You've seen him on YouTube and all these other appearances and all this good stuff. So we're happy to lock him down here for a little while to chat about some UFC stuff and also a little bit of pro wrestling as well. Mark Raimondi returns to Josh Nason's Punch-Out, and Mark, we'll start off with, as always, the really, really tough questions first. And are you a Curb Your Enthusiasm fan?
I am a fan, but I have not started watching the new season yet.
You haven't? Okay. Well, I will ask
you. I have not, unfortunately.
Okay. I will ask you this one question. This will make sense when you actually get a chance to watch it. Have you ever sent an accidental text on purpose?
And I'm not quite sure what that means.
So an accidental text on purpose is when you are trying to get out of a situation or try to make good or something like that, and you accidentally send someone a text, and it's on, but however, like you're trying to send it to someone else, but you send it to the person to make them think that you're trying to make them, trying to buddy up to them or trying to, kind of make a situation better by accidentally sending a text to them instead of somebody else.
I cannot say I've ever done that.
Okay.
I don't think. Not to my recollection.
Well, it was the center point of this past week's Curb Your Enthusiasm. So when you get there, it'll make a lot more sense. But Larry David is taking credit for inventing the accidental text on purpose.
Well, he is tremendous. So I will definitely check that out at some point.
Certainly is. Well, it's again, it's been a while since we last chatted. All kinds of stuff going on. But let's start in the world of pro wrestling. How about that?
Let's do the whole thing on pro wrestling. How about that?
Sounds good. So the last when you were on before, we didn't really get a chance to talk about your fandom for wrestling and so on. And it's something that we see obviously quite a bit with a lot of MMA writers and journalists and media people that are into pro wrestling or were and so on and so forth. So I guess we'll kind of level set a bit. What is your current appetite, your wrestling diet, so to speak?
All you can eat buffet right now, I would say, Josh, is my pro wrestling diet. It really ebbs and flows. It's ebbed and flowed throughout my entire life. Obviously I grew up being a wrestling fan. I fell out of it for a number of years, and I've been brought back into the fold in a big way by, I guess I would credit New Japan, some of the indies, and a little bit of WWE, but mostly New Japan and the indies have really brought me back to becoming a full-fledged hardcore fan again.
So you are a native New Yorker. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
So what got, obviously being in the Northeast myself, we kind of know it's just the general of the Northeast, New England, New York, New Jersey, and Philly. That whole area has just been a hotbed of wrestling for years mm-hmm. and years and years and years and years. What was your gateway drug?
Initially back in the day?
Yeah.
Oh man. I mean, I was a WWF fan, going back, man, you know, I probably started watching like really in the early 1990s when I was really young. I was born in 84. So I probably caught like the late 80s, early 90s of WWF. I don't really know what triggered it. It was so early on. I mean, I've been a fan for a really, really long time. I remember, you know, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, you know, that whole thing in the late 80s, I guess the mid 80s. So I don't really know what it was. It was so long ago, but it was from a very young age, I believe.
Gotcha. So Nassau Coliseum and Uniondale, all those kind of classic haunts around the area, I suppose you've been to?
Yeah, been to the Garden a couple times. Yep. Definitely went to the Coliseum once for a house show. Went to the Elks Lodge for some ECW
all right.
wonderfulness back in the day. I'm from Queens, so it was a short trip down Queens Boulevard for me to check that out. And I think that's it. I went to WrestleMania, but in more modern days as an adult at MetLife Stadium. But yeah, back in the day, I didn't go to a ton of live events, but I was definitely I consumed a great deal of wrestling on television.
And tell me about your WrestleMania experience. That was your first one, I assume. And
yes.
As an adult, what was did it meet your expectations? And was it possible going into it? I've never been to one myself, but I've heard mixed reviews. Obviously, people have been to a ton of these things, but I imagine being your first Mania, no matter what, you must walk in and be like, "Wow, it's pretty cool." I would assume
it was very fun. It was great. The Undertaker's entrance at MetLife Stadium was really epic. I think I still have that video on my phone. It's freaking awesome. It was a very cold day though in New York outdoors in April. So I remember it being cold, but I definitely had a very good time. It was a lot of fun.
So right now you are obviously you mentioned New Japan Pro Wrestling, PWG. It seems like the entire, I don't know if it's a prerequisite that if you work for MMA fighting that you either A, don't like wrestling, or B, you have to love kind of like New Japan and PWG and all that stuff. Because we talked to Dave Doyle a few times before. He's a huge fan, obviously, going down to Mexico. Seeing mm-hmm. the Lucha Libre down there. Esther Lynn, who I talked to, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, shot the shows in Long Beach and is a big fan and all that as well. So, yeah, it seems like there's some love for the pro graphs and especially the quality stuff there at the MMA fighting staff.
Yeah, there's no doubt. We have gone to the last two major PWG events. The Los Angeles contingent of MMA fighting has attended together en masse the last couple PWG events. It's been a lot of fun. Did Uncle Meltz tell you the story about how Esther shot PWG?
He didn't tell me anything specifically, no, but what you got?
So we went to the Battle of Los Angeles, all of us. I think Esther and Casey, of course, our videographer, Casey Lydon, and Esther's fiance, went to the final day of the Battle of Los Angeles. And Excalibur, who is one of the founders and one of the heads of PWG, I guess saw on social media that she was there. So after the event, Dave Meltzer, who is also, you know, a Wrestling Observer, also on our staff as an MMA writer, was talking to Excalibur, and before Dave could even say anything about Esther, before he could say a word about Esther, because she was interested in shooting it, Excalibur broke in and said, "Oh, I saw Esther Lynn was here tonight. It would be my dream for her to shoot PWG."
Wow!
And that is how it came together All-Star Weekend 2 weeks ago in Reseda. And most of those photos are still to come, by the way, because she's been really busy with on the road for MMA fighting and shooting out boxing in Wales. But I'm still excited to see the rest of those photos from PWG All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, it should be great. You've been to events with Dave before, pro wrestling events. Obviously, it's a much different vibe at a UFC event, Bellator event, in terms of, you know, media and things like that, and just how you don't get a chance to really interact with the fighters like you may do at a pro wrestling event, especially an indie event like this. Were you kind of surprised at the fan reception, just the overall kind of just how Dave is treated at these shows? It's quite something.
Yeah, I have a lot of experience because walking around with Ariel Helwani during UFC events and UFC fight weeks is a nightmare because you can't get a few feet without a fan wanting a picture with them. And it's very similar with that with Dave Meltzer at a PWG. I try to talk to Dave, and we talked at length, I would say, you know, during each of the PWGs, during intermission and after the event. And every 2 minutes, someone comes up to him and wants to take a picture. And not only that, they want to talk to him. They want to ask him. Yeah. They want to ask him random questions. Actually, I think it was All-Star Weekend Night 2. After the event, there was she appeared to be a drunk young lady who was asking Dave how he did his shorthand when he takes notes on matches. And she said she was asking for a friend, but I'm not sure if I believe her or I believed her at the time.
Uh-huh.
And Dave was like, I don't know. It's just my own shorthand. It's just only I can understand that. I can't really, you know, explain it. And she was like very curious about Dave's shorthand. But yeah, suffice to say, Dave Meltzer is a god in Reseda in American Legion Post 308.
Yeah, and I mean, what a life achievement, right?
I mean, yeah, it's better to be a god somewhere than a god nowhere at all.
That's true. And so I think it really kind of hit. He really started going more to the PWG shows. I'd say probably maybe the last 4 years or so, give or take, started doing kind of more and more, made it a regular thing. And I remember, and maybe it was last year when you start seeing these pictures come out of, you know, Dave, just people taking pictures of Dave, and he's a pretty mm-hmm. well-built guy, and people are like, wow, he's so jacked. And those just took over, like, our Twitter feed, and all. It just became such a conversation. And, I mean, our group was just, like, losing it. It's such a Dave thing to happen that he didn't mean to happen himself. You know, some people like that, you know, the TMZ culture, like, oh, you happen to be taking a picture of me here by mistake, quote unquote. I mean, he's just he's just being himself. And then people are just like fascinated by it. I said this before and I'll say it 1,000 times. There will never be anyone ever quite like Dave Meltzer ever, 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 ever again. He is he is one of a kind, and we're very lucky to have him.
I love Dave so much, and I've been following his work since I was probably a teenager the first time I started to really know who Dave Meltzer was and follow his work. Yeah, I mean, absolute legend, and I think you're right. There's no one like him. Every time I talk to him and every time I read an article by Dave Meltzer, I learn something new. I mean, it's without fail. It's crazy. Like I edit his articles for MMAfighting.com, and there's always like a little nugget or a kernel in there that I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool. It's the darndest thing. He's so knowledgeable. He really is like a walking encyclopedia of pro wrestling and combat sports and MMA. I mean, he's been there from the very beginning.
Yep. Yeah. I think the one thing, unfortunately, I think it is a curse with the newsletter that he writes so much every week. That I think he could do a lot of really good books of just like like he on our shows and our subscribers know this is that you get him on a topic and he'll just go. He's very similar like Peter King for the NFL. Just kind of you mm-hmm. get him on a subject and just kind of like a wind up toy, just kind of let them go. And he's got all this stuff locked away. I'm just like, get as much of this out as possible because, you know, years from now we're going to wish like, oh, we wish we'd heard stories about this and this and this. And it's the only thing with The Observer every week is that it just kind of – it takes away from what I think would be some pretty amazing books. So we'll he always talks about that type of stuff, books and things like that, not having enough time. I hope someday he does get the chance to write at least one more book, you know?
I really hope so. I would be first in line for that. I actually just recently read the latest edition of Death of WCW by Brian Alvarez and was R.D. Reynolds, right?
Yeah.
That was great.
Awesome.
I believe you were mentioned in the acknowledgments in that book.
You know, it was, and that cheapskate Brian has never sent me a copy of the book, even though I've harassed him for several years.
Wow.
And I just put the sight on my back and just kind of keep going with it. And yeah, Brian's dastardly like that, Mark. He's very dastardly. Where were you when you heard the news that Chris Jericho was heading over to Japan to face Kenny Omega for Wrestle Kingdom?
So I had been seeing the stuff that was going on Twitter, and I was talking to Dave at PWG a couple weeks ago. He said that he had a feeling that Jericho would be somehow make his way to New Japan for something, but he didn't think it was going to be Omega. That was actually before the tweet started. So I kind of had it in my head that it was a possibility that Jericho could go over there. I honestly didn't find out until I think it was when I woke up on Sunday morning, probably. It's a blur because I stayed up till 6:30 a.m. After UFC 217, 6:30 a.m. Eastern time. And I was waiting for Casey, our videographer, to upload the final video of the night, because I'm like usually the last line of defense on the website at night, mm-hmm. just about every night. And so I'm waiting for this thing to come in, and it's very late. Obviously I'm exhausted. We had just, you know, been at the arena for 7-8 hours. We had watched a lot of emotionally draining fights, and it was a long week. So I'm just sitting there like half asleep, trying to stay awake. And of course I put on, you know, New Japan Power Struggle, to try to keep myself awake. And I think I was watching during the, I was like in and out of sleep during like the Osprey, Skrull match. And I don't remember hearing about Jericho until the next morning, unless I'm just completely forgetting. But the video did go out, and I'm pretty sure there were no typos in my YouTube blurb. And I think when I woke up, I saw a DM from my girlfriend about with the video of Omega and Jericho's little promo there, ripping up the photo and everything. I think that's when the first time I heard about it. I was pretty psyched. Very tired, but pretty psyched.
Yeah, I think it came as a big surprise. Well, I get it, everyone kind of thought that the match would be on the cruise,
That's right.
I think there was kind of this thing in everyone's back of everyone's head that they assumed that Jericho was still kind of under contract to WWE, or just even mm-hmm. though he was off the road and all the stuff, that there was something there. So it's kind of like, oh wow, this is actually happening, and it was. And to hear Dave talk about that, kind of the idea, and I need to hear how he fully said this first, was that they were inspired. I think either Jericho or Omega, or both of them, were inspired by, of all things, Mayweather versus McGregor, in terms of making the biggest possible match that you could and to draw interest and money and things like that. And
yeah.
You know, initially when you think of that, it's kind of like, is that too much of a stretch? But if you think of how the landscape is, there's not a lot of these kind of these bigger name guys that can go from place to place to place. Mm-hmm. And Jericho, I know he's I want to say he's a lot closer to the end than the beginning, but in terms of his wrestling career, he definitely is. How many more chances could he get a chance to do this? And I mean, at this point, he's got a chance to do a huge match against one of the top, if not the top wrestler in the game today, in a huge stage, and to make the industry just kind of like, oh wow, this is happening, and turn their head away from the big promotion WWE. So I mean, he is like working at a level far above what a lot of us give him credit for. He's brilliant, and the fact this is going to happen is that's great. I think that's great for wrestling. It's great for everyone. It's going to be a hell of a ways to kick off 2018.
I am very excited. I want to say that I am more excited about that match than any WWE match this year. You know, yeah. I don't think I've been as psyched for a match as I am about that one. And I'm just very curious to see what they'll do and how it will go. And I think Jericho is like just a genius when it comes to just creativity and finding, you know, new ways to do it. The Festival of Friendship was one of the best segments all year. you know, maybe the best segment on WWE TV all year. That was, and then from hearing his podcast, that apparently was his brainchild. That was really what he wanted to do, and he fought very hard to get it done. Thought that was phenomenal. He still, I mean, he's not the worker that he used to be, of course, because he's, what is he, late 40s now. So, I mean, but Kenny Omega has a really good way of making guys look good, taking a lot of bumps. I'm sure it'll be a fantastic match, and I'm sure it'll be very unique. I'm sure they'll come up with something cool, something different. Man, I can't wait for that show. I think Esther and Casey might actually fly out to Tokyo for Wrestle Kingdom, and I'm very jealous of them.
Wow. Dave was talking a few weeks ago about how they held a certain block of tickets aside for U.S. buyers, and those went like that, like quick.
Very fast.
Yeah, so it's yeah, that's fascinating stuff. So one more wrestling question, then we'll get on to some fighting. Are you excited as I am for the 30 for 30 with Ric Flair airing later tonight?
I am. It's recording on my DVR right now. I've heard mixed things. I think that I'll enjoy it thoroughly. I did hear some criticisms of it that it didn't go as deep as it could have. But again, I won't know until I watch it. I'll keep an open mind. Anything with Ric Flair, I'm sure to enjoy and consume vigorously. So I'll let my own judgment before I pass anything along.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of no big surprise, tons of content from all these different, you know, sports websites, and you know, everyone trying to kind of get in on some sort of content when it comes to this stuff. And you know, ESPN obviously pushing heavy. They did a thing on his robes yesterday, and just it's kind of interesting. All these different sources. Dan Wetzel did something for Yahoo, and just everyone is doing this stuff all over the place.
I read that was great.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see this. That when certain things just kind of like make the industry kind of like turn, I would say the content industry kind of turn their head, and pro wrestling for whatever reason is like this it's weird relationship with pop culture, and that's reviled by a lot of people, but it's beloved by a lot of people that are at different. It's affected them and kind of come into their life at different stages, and this seems to be just it's scratching the itch, and you wonder the thing I thought about today was Hulk Hogan's probably sitting there being like, where's my 30 for 30, brother? I want some of this attention, you know?
Without a doubt. I think I've heard that he comes off very well in his interviews about Ric Flair, and he puts him over pretty big, but you have to wonder how much is he just working, and how much he's just trying to get back into the good graces of WWE just so he can make that that inevitable comeback that's probably going to happen before too long.
Exactly. That will not be at Wrestle Kingdom. I will pretty much guarantee that.
You never know.
That's true. You never,
Hogan versus Okada.
Oh, boy. That would be – oh, wow. You've given a lot of people a lot of ideas, and I don't know if they're good ones. So we'll speaking of workers, I want to talk a little bit about kind of where we go from this past weekend. But I was struck by something some comments from Dana White over the weekend, and I was reading a Ben Folks piece at MMA Junkie today about you know, kind of just the, I don't want to say the Trumpian attitude, but just the, you know, Dana White basically saying that, you know, you only believe the stuff that you hear from me, and basically kind of just blasting people, you know, inadvertently taking shots at guys like Dave and other people. I'll talk about the business so much and whatever, which is, you know, it's part of the DNA of talking about fighting, is because it's prize fighting. It's, you're trying to attract people, and it's part of the DNA. We just kind of get that. And, yeah, just kind of the attitude of, you know, everyone else doesn't know anything. I'm the only one that tells, if you're going to hear it, hear from me. Obviously there's a litany of things in his past where he said one thing and then the other happened. So everyone just kind of takes this with a grain of salt. But, you know, if he doesn't want people to have bad numbers or whatever, just, you know, make himself more available to do monthly conference calls or something like that to talk about the numbers. Like, it is part of the business and it's never going to go away. So just kind of embrace a little bit more instead of saying, well, these people don't know what they're talking about. And in most cases, everyone kind of does know what they're talking about. What did you take away from just his comments? Just kind of usual blustery Dana White or anything else from that?
I think it's just typical Dana White. He said it before, and the ironic thing about it is that it was just a few months ago that Dana White was saying George St. Pierre will never come back to MMA, and now George St. Pierre is the UFC middleweight champion. Mm. So I think everything – I mean, it's almost like a running joke on social media that if Dana White says something is going to happen, it's not going to happen. And if Dana White says that something's not going to happen, it is going to happen. So, I mean, the fact that he's saying only listen to them when it's just hilarious to me because it's – I mean, they're only going to say what serves them best at that time. And that's fine. That's fine. But then you can't say only listen to us when we say something because he's lied before and he lies constantly. So it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really change anything about the way I do things, or it doesn't really bother me because that's just him and he's a promoter and he says a bunch of stuff and you got to weed through the crap to get to the reality. And that's kind of what journalists are in place for and why we have our jobs. As far as the number stuff, it's like, I mean, I'm not Dave Meltzer. I couldn't tell you what exactly how much pay-per-view buys any UFC pay-per-view has gotten, but I can see what our inner metrics are saying. I can see what our traffic is saying. I can see what our social media engagement is saying. I can see a lot of things and I can compare it to other pay-per-views and how, and you know, we all have that in front of us. Everyone who runs an MMA site has that in front of them. So you could tell what's doing well and what's not. And funny thing about this fight, and actually it was very similar to what happened at UFC 214 with Jones and Cormier. It was a relatively quiet week in terms of buzz, right? There wasn't a whole lot of buzz, I think, for either fight. There wasn't a lot of mainstream buzz. There wasn't a lot of social media engagement, at least for us, and not more than like a normal average card.
Yeah.
But both times on both fight days, traffic and social media engagement picked up a great deal. And I didn't think that Jones Cormier was going to do that well until fight day. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to do somewhere in the 800 range, probably from what I saw. And the same thing happened on Saturday, honestly, Josh. I didn't think that GSP Bisping was really there. There wasn't that buzz there. There didn't seem like there's a lot of, mainstream interest, but that changed on Saturday. And I think that's going to do real well too. I think that could do in the 900,000 range now. I'm not so sure if we'll get a million. But I think that's going to do really well, way better than I thought. I was saying 600 going into the week. So it's you never can tell, and I understand for the UFC keeping us ignorant is a key. They're never going to talk about the numbers, and a big reason why they're not going to do that is because they're never going to. They like the uncertainty for two reasons, because they don't want to say if it's a great number, they don't want to say it. Because the fighters who get pay-per-view points then will get paid off the number they say, right? So if they keep that in-house, they can tell those fighters anything they want. There's no Ali Act. They don't have to divulge their exact figures. If it's a bad number, they don't want to admit that either, because that looks bad for them from a PR perspective. It means that their business is not doing as well as they thought. So there's no incentive for them on either spectrum to talk about how much exactly these pay-per-views are getting. That's why they don't do it. That's my opinion. I mean, that's speculation, but I mean that just kind of makes sense to me.
That would be interesting. You mentioned about fighters that are obviously paid on pay-per-view buys and get bonuses based on that. I mean, if they can't, this is kind of my mind's just kind of folded over itself. Like, so if a fighter, it's almost like there has to be some sort of independent group that can verify this. Otherwise, you're just basically trusting the organization and say, here are the numbers, and they could say, well, it's really a weird thing and something we really don't know a whole lot about how that whole process works. Like, is there an independent counsel or someone that can verify, it takes, 3 months to account for this stuff or what have you, and here's what it is, or are they just kind of like, we'll tell you what it is. And that would be, that'd be just crazy to me if that was the case.
That's the case. The fighters have no recourse otherwise. That is the case. The UFC says, well, we got this many pay-per-view buys, so here's your check for this percentage. There's no way for the fighters to actually know that for sure. Until there's the Ali Act, that's not going to happen.
That is wow, that's amazing. It's one of those things you don't really think of, but then you hear it, and it's kind of like, wow, it's just so many layers of just things in the sport that are just so wrong. You're just so counterintuitive, and it's kind of like, well, it's just the way it is. And meanwhile, this thing gets sold for $4+ billion. It's just
that's right.
It's just wow. What a business. So if people listening to this, if you want to kind of catch Mark's thoughts on the show itself, go to MMA Fighting's YouTube page, a really good post-fight show with Ariel Helwani. I love those post-fight shows. I think that the immediacy and things like that, those are just great. I think they kind of fit a void that you don't really get with Fox Sports or anything like that. And just it's more more realistic coverage and so on. So you guys do a really good job of that. So I kind of want to look at, you know, what's ahead. So we have this cavalcade of names and kind of where they're going. No retirements or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So GSP comes out of this with the, you know, his a new title, 185 pounds, mm-hmm. and looks like I won't say looks like a new man, but looks like a very a fun guy to watch and someone that we are very interested in seeing what happens again. Was non-committal when it came to what he was going to do next. He kind of talked around the question that Joe Rogan asked him inside the cage. What would be your preference to see what is next for GSP? Do you want to see him stay at 185? Do you want to see him go back down to 170? Quote-unquote money fights. What would you like to see him do next?
I don't feel like George St. Pierre came back to the UFC after 4 years away to just be another guy, to just be another person who has to abide by the rankings, which are BS anyway. I don't think that a matchup against Robert Whittaker, which from a pure merit standpoint is the one that should happen. I know it's the one the UFC is pushing. I just don't find that to be a sexy matchup. I don't think GSP is here for that. He's 36 years old. We don't know how many fights he has left. Probably not more than two or three. Why waste one of those on Robert Whittaker, who I think is a great fighter. He's fantastic, but he's not a draw. He's just not an exciting name. He's not a guy that people want to really pay to see at this point in his career. I would much prefer George St. Pierre take fights against fellow legends, against popular names. If he's gonna try to do the whole title thing and be in the rankings, I wouldn't mind him seeing him going back down to fight Tyron Woodley. There doesn't seem to be a clear contender right now at 170. There are a few good ones, but George St. Pierre never lost that belt, you know, in the cage. He never lost as champion during that run, during that, you know, 6 years when he was champ. And then there's Conor McGregor. You know, there's Conor McGregor. That's a possibility too. I think that's probably the biggest fight the UFC can do right now. And the UFC, they've been hotshotting these matchups to get those good short-term gains. And I think that may have hurt them in some ways. And I think they haven't done a great job building the long-term stories, you know, because they've kind of hotshotted these short-term things. But I can understand why that would be tempting for them to do GSP versus McGregor. There's never going to be a better time to do that than now. So, I mean, I don't love the Whittaker matchup, but they want to do Woodley. Okay, that would be cool. That would be interesting to see. And it would be a good way to put over Woodley, too, if he wins. You know, either way, you know, getting that fight with GSP could put over Woodley. McGregor, I mean, I think fans would – a lot of the hardcore fans may be furious about that matchup if it happens. But we all know that they're going to watch anyway, and the mainstream fans are going to pick that up. And, maybe one more name to throw out, Anderson Silva. If he is able to beat Kelvin Gastelum, which I don't think he will. I really don't think he will later this month in Shanghai. If he were to beat him, I can see them putting together a title fight between GSP and Anderson Silva. Who would not want to see that? I think they should have done that right away, honestly. I think that as fun as Saturday night was, and it was one of the best events of all time for the UFC, I still didn't love that matchup with GSP and Bisping, because I felt like there were better options for GSP. And now the UFC, as good as that night was, and as much money as they made, now they're in a bit of a quandary once again, because now a guy who really has no business being the middleweight champion is the middleweight champion, and people are going to expect some kind of a merit-based, you know, result out of this, and it might not happen.
Yeah, it's one of the big conflicts that UFC has had for quite some time, and a great term with hot-shotting. I mean, it's very true. Like, there's these divisions that are just held up, or you just don't know. They get stuck, and you have kind of contenders kind of backfilling and trying to find guys to fight each other and all this. And yeah, it wasn't. I think you're right. I'm not really that excited to see him against Robert Whittaker. I think from an athletic standpoint, strictly sports, I think it would be good. But Whittaker is just, he's not at that level yet. He's yeah, he's a fun guy, young guy to watch, but it's going to take some time to get there. I think the three fights I kind of had in mind were the Anderson Silva fight. I think that would be when it comes to trying to get the lapsed MMA fans and these people from that came along during the Spike era to get them back. I think that would be huge because even though mm-hmm. they're both a little bit older, I think still you have these people that we used to talk about this, 5-10 years ago was just this who would win and the whole weight classes and all that stuff. That was just a big question. Well, we've seen GSP not only win at 185 pounds, but beat the champion at 185 pounds. And I think that's a big thing. I would love to see the McGregor fight. I think there are certain guys now, and I think we're kind of moving into that era of they want, like Conor McGregor, they want big fights. They don't want to be one of the guys anymore. They just want mm-hmm. they're in a separate money class, so to speak, and there aren't a lot of these talents. So when you have a few of them around, I think that's a very interesting thing. And yeah, I think a GSP McGregor, GSP Silva, or even a GSP Woodley
Nick Diaz.
Nick Diaz, that could be something.
Nate Diaz.
Woodley, if you could do the chance to become a dual champion, just like McGregor did, that would be kind of the rub there. So yeah, I think there's options, but yeah, him going back to being one of the guys and, fighting 2-3 times a year, I think that era's done. But I think, a fun fight here and there and stuff that's really going to draw and kind of get the most out of him, I'm all for that. And I think, hopefully the Saturday's past Saturday was the start of that.
I think of the four or five names that we mentioned, I would say that Whitaker is probably last on my list of guys that I want to see GSP fight. Again, I just don't want to see him be another guy. I don't think that's where he's at. And the UFC kind of put themselves in that predicament by putting him right into that title shot with Michael Bisping, which I understand that he wanted and Bisping wanted, so it was a tough spot. But this is where they are again. They have to decide between the interim belt, the rankings, the merit, or what most fans really do want to see, what the mainstream fans, what the casual fans want to see.
Would you do Whitaker Rockhold in Perth?
Oh yeah, I mean that's I think Rockhold is still right there. Obviously, Bisping did beat him in the first round, but he also has a win over Bisping in dominant fashion. I still think gun to my head, he still might be the best middleweight in the world. I think I would probably give it to Whitaker at this point because I think he's great. But to me, Rockhold is still right there.
When we look back on the reign of Michael Bisping, my thought is he put the wins together, but he is, we were talking about Chris Jericho earlier, being able to kind of work everything and get himself in these really big positions and interesting positions. Michael Bisping really has had a kind of masterful year and a half, whatever it is, against big names that are almost on the way out, should have been on the way out, and he manages to get wins over them and kind of pad his stats a little bit. And he also got the big win over Rockhold, whether you call that a fluke or not, he still got the victory. And just this, this really interesting, fun, nice end to his career. He might have, one or two fights left, who knows. But it's when you look back at his middleweight title reign, do you call it a great run? Do you call it good? Do you call it kind of an advantageous run? What do you think?
I think it was a great run for him. I mean, I think for him, it was kind of like the cherry on top of a career where, he really worked his ass off. He really made the most of his physical abilities. Look, Michael Bisping has never been the fastest, most athletic, the strongest. He's really just an average guy. I mean, he's a better than average guy, but in terms of a UFC fighter, he doesn't have any of those elite abilities and attributes. So I think that he made the most of his career. He won a lot of fights. He stayed relevant for a long time. He became the best heel to me in MMA history. He was really a tremendous heel, maybe not in history, but certainly the best one who's still active right now. I think as far as the title run goes, I think that he the Dan Henderson fight. Look, again, he didn't. He wasn't the number one contender. Henderson, Bisping did not dominate by any means. A lot of people thought that he lost. It could have been a draw with the one round. It could have been a 10-8 for Henderson. Was it an Anderson Silva like reign atop the division? Of course not. But I think it was a good way to give Bisping the I want to call it like almost like a lifetime achievement award, because he was just a really good, consistent, admirably hardworking fighter for a long time, and he got the title and a couple of nice paydays and a couple of nice big fights at the end of his career. I think the whole thing was fine. I think he should be very happy with how it's all unfolded.
Yep, I would agree. Let's go to women's strawweight, because I'm very interested in kind of what's going on there. Rose Namajunas, the new champion, having the shocking upset over Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I know how, you know, sometimes Joanna just got run over in that first round, and sometimes that could be a reason that people are like, oh, no immediate rematch, let her build herself back up. I don't see it that way. I am really interested in seeing a rematch between these two, and I think it could be, you know, not a mega event on pay-per-view, but a very much anticipated fight. I think Joanna will do her job in promoting it, and will just this comeback story, and just the way that she is, I think she'll do a great job with that, and Rose kind of allow her to build her character, so to speak, and see how she goes about doing things. I think that would be the most anticipated match you could do at strawweight right now, and I don't see any reason to hold this off. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm really torn about that whole thing, and I think you're talking about the immediate rematch.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, so Rose's next shot. Yeah. Would you put her against Joanna? Would you have her against someone else?
I'm very torn, because there's a lot of good fighters in that division who are knocking on the door, but all of them have already lost to Jędrzejczyk for the most part. If Tisha Torres can beat Michelle Waterson, she would kind of put herself on that list. But you know, she also has some key losses. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I do think it would be a big fight. I think and one of my questions to Dana White, actually, at the press conference on Thursday last week before the fight, was what will it take for Joanna Jędrzejczyk to become a pay-per-view headliner herself? And he didn't really give me a great answer, but I thought that it was heading that direction if she were to beat Namajunas. I think that she was a star all week in New York. I was really impressed by how the fans really took to her. Outside of maybe GSP, she was the top. I mean, as far as like the reactions go, she was right behind GSP, in some cases even ahead of GSP. So I think that she is a star. It really will depend on how she overcomes this loss and how she snaps out of it. She's done a good job so far. She's faced the music. She's talked to a number of media outlets. She went to the press conference. So that's a good start. That's probably as far as the biggest fight they could do at strawweight, there's no doubt, because there's no one else that really pulls in the kind of interest than Joanna does. So yeah, I mean, I certainly could see them doing that. I would not be upset. I know Jessica Andrade is trying to get that fight, but in terms of just drawing power, I do think that would be a big fight. Would they put it on pay-per-view? I don't know. I could see it being maybe a Fox headliner, mm-hmm. or maybe like a co-main event, you know, on one of these cards coming up. But yeah, that, I mean, as far as money, as far as drawing power, yeah, that would probably be the biggest fight they could do.
Yeah, I, you know, and so many people now are trying to anoint stars the minute that a big thing happens. Obviously, Rose, this is a huge victory. Bill Simmons was talking about her, completely mispronounced her name, but that's another thing. Uh-huh. But I think I immediately didn't see like superstar. I thought like I thought what Joanna said about, to kind of paraphrase, like, now you're in the spotlight as the champion, and now you have to go, like, the attention is on you. And I wonder, you know, how Rose will handle that, if she's just going to kind of do her thing, be herself, if this changes her at all. And now that she is the hunted, whether that, you know, changes kind of how she is and who she is and all that. I'm really fascinated to see. I think she can be a definite attraction. I just kind of wonder how this next 6 months or so plays out for her.
Without a doubt. I think she is someone that the UFC, they could have done a little bit better of a job of her after she lost to Esparza. I think they were ready to put the rocket to her back if she had beaten Esparza. In fact, they were actually before that fight, they were actually tentatively scheduling like a media lunch for her in LA had she won, if she had beaten Esparza back in 2014. When Esparza won, that media lunch got canceled and there was no media lunch for the champion, but there would have been one if Nama Yunus was the champion. So they were already ready to do it. Yeah. And then when she lost, I feel like they didn't devote any resources to her and she has had to do it her own way. And she doesn't really embrace that so much as far as being the star. She's going to have to now, obviously, because she's the champ. But Joanna was really doing a great job embracing that. I'm curious to see how Nama Yunus embraces it, because she's more focused on her own thing and she wants to change the world and she wants to be an advocate for mental health, which I think is fantastic. But she could further that agenda and further her causes if she is more willing to be, and not that she's not open with the media, she's very open, but she needs to get out there more, and I think she will, and I think she will end up embracing it. But there's a lot of pressure, you know, when you become champion. She's someone that does not love pressure, of course, no one does, but she's been open about how maybe she wasn't ready a few years ago. Maybe, hopefully, she's matured now. She's certainly a much better fighter than she was 3 years ago, so maybe she'd be more willing to also embrace that. The PR and all the media obligations now. I think she could be a huge star. I mean, she has everything. She has everything you could ever want. She just knocked someone out in the first round, but yeah. She's an incredibly exciting fighter. She has flying armbar finishes. I mean, she's a good looking girl. She talks very well. She's charismatic. She has everything. So I mean, if she embraces it, they could really go a lot of places with her.
And hopefully they find the right outlets to. She's a very endearing figure, and you mentioned some of her issues she's talked about in the past. That is, I don't want to say it's hot right now, but it is more. It is a great time to be open about who you are, no matter what walk of life you're from.
Yep.
There's the world is kind of ready to embrace this, especially in this era of just so much negativity. People look for these positive things, and especially, you know, I'm just if she ever were to get a show like Ellen, for example, you know, just mm-hmm. these things which you have these people are like your hearts kind of go out to them, and it just you find the right opportunities, you can get them in front of not you and I and not other our readers, but people that are may have you know, on the fringes, you know, the mainstream sports folks, and just the group that Ronda Rousey helped attract in from the outside, the soccer moms and things like that. If you can get that with Rose Namajunas by her telling her story and doing it honestly and being who she is, that could be something. So yeah, I'm mm-hmm. really interested to see how this plays out. In another one, we'll kind of round out our MSG talk with this. So we have the Bantamweight Championship, obviously. TJ Dillashaw reclaiming the crown. To me, it seems pretty clear. I would the winner of Dominic Cruz and Jimmy Rivera coming up December. My thought is that would be the obvious next choice for mm-hmm. number one contender. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think if, especially if Dominic Cruz wins, I think that would put him right back in that rematch with TJ Dillashaw, which was a great fight the first time.
Yep.
Really close fight. I actually had Dillashaw winning that first fight, to be honest with you. I mean, it was one of the closest high level title fights in recent memory for me. I think that if Cruz wins, he gets a shot. If Rivera wins, I could see them possibly looking at an immediate rematch for Garbrandt. I don't know for sure if that will happen because Rivera is just not as known yet. It really depends on how – if you're to beat Cruz, it depends on how he does it and how he acts afterward. If he really goes for it, if he cuts a good promo. I know we're talking about MMA, but it's true. Yeah, I mean, it really true. Is. Yeah. That depends. But the winner of that fight certainly has the inside track to getting Dillashaw next. But I do think if it isn't – even if it's not right away, I do think Garbrandt and Dillashaw will fight again at some point.
100%. Yeah, I think it's one of these rivalries. Both guys are young enough, and I'm not that interested in seeing Dillashaw versus Demetrius Johnson right off the bat. I am interested in seeing that as a fight, but I'd much rather kind of let the divisions kind of play themselves out. But, you know, who knows how that goes. I want to kind of round the bend talking about this this weekend because this show coming up in Norfolk, Virginia, and there's been
mm-hmm.
no shortage of obviously shows in the past, and this whole like last 4 months has been crazy, and there's basically an event every single weekend throughout the course of the year, except for Christmas weekend. So this show coming up this weekend, I can't wait for this show. This is like one of these perfect. I love Crossroads fights, fighters that veteran A, veteran B, and kind of where are they at in this point of their career. This show is like packed in there. It's all on free TV. This is great. We have Dustin Poirier against Anthony Pettis in the main event. Matt Brown versus Diego Sanchez in the co-main event. Matt Brown's final fight, depending on if you believe him or not. Andre Arlovski against Junior Albini. You have Nate Marquardt on the show. Rafael Sunsau returning. Joe Lozon versus Clay Guida. John Dodson versus Marlon Moraes. And Sage Northcutt's also on the show. There's all these different guys and names and kind of like, and girls, like, where are they at in their career? I don't know if you share my excitement. This past Saturday was fantastic, top to bottom, outstanding stuff. To come back with this card afterward, this is like perfect A-plus stuff for me.
It's one of the best fight nights on FS1 that I can recall in the last couple of years, I think. I mean, it has a chance to be, certainly on paper, it has a chance to be. Can't really say if it's going to be or not until after it's over. But in terms of the names that are on there, I mean, Dustin Poirier and Anthony Pettis are guys that, I mean, Anthony Pettis is headline pay-per-views. Dustin Poirier has been one of the more successful lightweights of the last couple of years. And like you said, that fight is so pivotal. You got Sage Northcutt on the prelims.
Yeah.
John Dodson against Marlon Moraes on the prelims. You know, Sage Northcutt was on main cards of big pay per views. So it's a fantastic fight night. I actually love the Angela Hill versus Nina Ansaroff fight. I think that's a really fantastic fight. A winner of that fight could put themselves kind of in that a little bit deeper in that conversation at 115. I mean, Joe Lozon and Clay Guida. I mean, that could be a fun legends fight a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a really cool fight card. It's a really. I think actually the end of the year for the UFC is really, really good. There's a show every weekend, and I think every single one of them is pretty solid, which they need. I mean, I think it's been a little bit of a tough year. I think it's been a little bit of a grind. I don't think it certainly wasn't 2016 when they made a boatload of money on pay-per-view. There was no McGregor aside from the Mayweather fight. There was no Ronda Rousey. I think they need this big stretch. It's starting to, I mean, 217 was fantastic. And 214 was obviously great, but other than that, it's been a little bit of a down year. So I think that at the end of this year could turn it around a little bit.
Well, you know, Dana White said it's their most successful year ever.
Well, I mean, to me, that means they must have made just an insane amount of money on Mayweather-McGregor because yeah. I think, like I said at the top, we don't know exactly what the numbers are that they're doing on pay-per-view, but we know enough. We see it ourselves, and we know enough about the kind of attention that it gets to say that it didn't, you know, we know that Demetrius Johnson and Ray Borg, that card didn't do a million pay-per-view buys. You know, we know enough about it to say that Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko are not doing McGregor numbers, so... So yeah, I mean, unless they made just an incredible amount of money on Maymac, which they might have, I don't think it's the biggest. I don't think it's the biggest year ever in UFC history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when it comes this weekend, we'll kind of finish up with this. So as you look up and down all these veterans and interesting guys at different points of their career, different women and so on, what story are you most excited to see a play out, or what result, or what question, I guess, are you going to want, you most want to have answered out of the show coming up this weekend?
I'd still say the main event. I think there's a ton of good fights, but as far as like the storylines go, I think that Pettis and Poirier is super, super interesting. It'll be a really good indication of where Anthony Pettis is right now as the former champion. He's 30 years old. He did have the win over Jim Miller, of course, at UFC 213. Looked pretty good in that fight, but probably didn't look as good as he did on that run that got him to the title. And then you have Poirier, a guy who he's on a really good run right now, and he had that really weird fight with Alvarez at UFC 211 against Eddie Alvarez, a fight that he was tuning up Alvarez for a little bit, and then Alvarez, you know, got the better of him. It was a crazy fight. So I think the winner of that fight will kind of carve out a little bit of an area in that lightweight division as far as being a contender. Maybe not the number one contender, certainly, but it's an important fight for both of them to kind of see where they're at. The loser of that will have a really hard time climbing up the ladder at this point, and the winner will have a pretty easy time. And they're both marketable guys, they're both exciting fighters, so the winner of that fight has a chance to fight for a title, possibly even in 2018. But with Conor McGregor holding the belt, who the heck knows?
So, final question: you mentioned all the shows coming up between now and the end of the year. Really, kind of strong finish. Knock on wood, no injuries or anything like that. What is there a particular fight or card that you're most looking forward to before the end of the year?
Ooh, man. Detroit. Detroit looks outstanding. I really love the Detroit card coming up. And I believe – I want to say that's December 2nd, right?
Correct.
It's the day – the tough finale is December 1st in Vegas. And then Detroit is the night after that. It doesn't have the biggest names in the world. It's probably not gonna do a very high pay per view buy rate. But I think Holloway Edgar is a ridiculously good fight. Francis Ngannou against Overeem. I mean that is super intriguing to see really where Ngannou is at. Henry Cejudo against Sergio Pettis. A fight that could decide who's getting the next shot at Demetrius Johnson, especially if Sergio Pettis wins. I think he's a shoo-in for that. The aforementioned Eddie Alvarez against Justin Gaethje, which hold on to your seats, ladies and gentlemen. That could be an absolute rip-roaring good time. And also the aforementioned TJ Torres, another big fight against the karate hottie Michelle Waterson. That whole main card is ridiculous. Let's please knock on wood that stays together. That is an absurdly good main card.
I would agree. And we almost had Iyal Quinta versus Paul Felder before Iyal Quinta got hurt.
That's right. Imagine that's right. That. I think we're still going to get Paul Felder right on that card. I'm hoping that he still stays on it.
Yeah, I would hope so. If he can't fight on it, maybe he can actually call the show. He did a really good job this summer with the contender series and stuff. So yeah, he's a guy. It was interesting when they first kind of slotted him into that position and it was like, Paul Felder, really? And then, yeah, he's really good.
He's very good, and I believe he's making his color commentary debut on a main UFC fight night on Saturday in Norfolk. Also, fun fact about Paul Felder, before he was ever considering an MMA career, he was a decorated theater actor. He actually went to school for theater in Philadelphia, and he is a critically acclaimed theater actor in Philadelphia, and thought he was going to be in Hollywood and all that kind of thing. And then he got into MMA, and now he's pursuing that. So he's very well spoken. He's extremely articulate, and he can probably do some Romeo and Juliet and some Hamlet, Macbeth. Who knows?
So to all those people that have kids that are making fun of theater kids, look, you never know. One of them one day could get in the UFC and then kick their ass and your ass.
Literally one of the toughest men in one of the toughest divisions in the world, and he was a decorated theater kid. So who knew?
You never know. But what we do know is we've had a great time here, almost an hour. We appreciate the generosity with time, and before we let you go, being a pro wrestling fan, we'll give you the chance to promote, throw you the microphone, tell the people where they can read you, hear you, feel you, connect with you. The floor is yours.
Well, I mean, obviously MMAfighting.com is the number one website for MMA in the universe, I would say. I think that's I don't know if that would be agreed upon by everyone, but I feel that way, and I think most people feel like it is the top site right now in the world. And of course on Twitter at Mark with a C, MARC underscore Raimondi, RAIMONDI. And I think that's pretty much it. I mean, you'll probably see me tweeting a little bit about pro wrestling on there as well. But yeah, other than that, those are the places to find me.
Yeah. And if you see Mark at a PWG event, push Dave Meltzer off the side and get a picture with Mark instead. Okay. I mean, that's the least you can do.
You can't see me past Dave's arms anyway. So.
Very true. Very true. Well, it's going to be a great weekend ahead. It's been a fun month, hopefully a fun rest of the year. And we hope to talk to you soon. Mark Raimondi, thanks so much for returning to Josh Nace's Punch Out. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Big thanks to Mark Raimondi for dropping by. Follow him on Twitter. Get those pictures with him if you happen to be at an event out in California at a PWG show. And let him know. Talk to him. These guys love to talk about pro wrestling when they're not talking about MMA. So engage, chat, love, all that good stuff. A couple leftover notes from this past weekend. We have not talked about, and nobody really talking about, Ryan Bader. Poor Ryan Bader and poor Bellator. Actually, not poor Bellator. They were the ones that kind of put themselves in this position. with these events. But, you know, Bellator, their light heavyweight champion, Mr. Bader, had a nice second round TKO win over Linton Vassell this past Friday night that nobody is talking about, and really nobody's talking about anything on this card. A new first ever women's flyweight champion or strawweight champion. I am completely blanking on which division it was. Flyweight, that's what it was. This past weekend, nobody is talking about that, and it's unfortunate for the promotion. They have some good talent there, fun talent, and it is just getting swallowed whole by events like 217. And anything they can do to kind of get away from UFC, I think it is best. There is a appetite for good UFC, a good MMA, and obviously for great MMA. When you put kind of okay MMA next to great MMA, you know, what's going to win out, right? So I just wish they would do one event a month, keep it away from UFC as much as possible, pack them in, and get the buzz going like they did with Scott Coker did with Strikeforce. But kind of talked about that ad nauseum. But regardless, really feel bad for Ryan Bader. No way he's talking about this victory. And, you know, light heavyweight division, they have a lot of talent there. You know, it just really sucks. Really sucks. So let's see what else really sucks is Dominic Cruz, broken arm. He is out of his fight with Jimmy Rivera in December. So that is a big blow for him because he has obviously been out for a long time. And who else got hurt? Oh, Frankie Edgar. He's going to be out for looks about 6 weeks with a hand injury. Max Holloway is determined to main event that Detroit show. He's a big baby face in that way. If you saw some of his tweets, he is wanting to fight in that show against somebody. Who knows? It could be a guy. I think I heard Dave Meltzer mention Ricardo Lamas as a possibility. Obviously, Cub Swanson would be fun. However, he is set to fight Brian Ortega to headline the Fresno event coming up in December. So there's really no good answer. It really is unfortunate. Jose Aldo has thrown his hat in the ring as well. So we'll have to see what happens there. But, you know, as Mark and I talked about on the show, there's so many good things. And then all of a sudden, just this stuff happens, and it's just such a, you know, just unfortunate. I really was looking forward to a nice, smooth next month and a half to kind of carry us out and hopefully get some momentum going in early next year. But that's the way that the cookie crumbles, or the hand crumbles, or the bones crumble, as they say. Actually, no one actually says that, so as I say. Let's see. I think that's about it. Spending an hour plus, you have a lot of choices in your podcasting day. So thank you so much for downloading this and listening to it, sharing it if you like it. That is always appreciated. That just kind of helps keep things moving, and I appreciate it as well. So we'll let you guys go. Big thanks to Mark Raimondi for stopping by. Obviously, check him out. Thanks to all of you for listening. This has been episode 82 of Josh Nason's Punch Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.